So I just wanted to pass along a request, which is, so at the end of last class, I showed you how joint probability distributions, for probability distributions for joint events in classical probability theory have a tensor product structure, and gave you some examples of that. If any of you find that interesting and want like a little side project, I would be pleased if someone looked into this and maybe come up with some more mathematically formal expression of that parallel. I think that would be a nice contribution. Yeah?
I'm not necessarily interested, but here's, nice
solution.
isn't that connecting that to like the classical phase, like conditional probabilities with weak values?
What's weak values got to do with it?
No, I mean, if you want to write down something like joint probability distributions and you want to ask what conditional probabilities are, then conditional probabilities, if you write them down quantum mechanically, are just weak values. So it's
They're not just weak values. Weak values are a very specialized topic of limited value. And I don't think there's any connection there. And the question of conditional probability is a separate issue. But anyways, if anyone is interested in that, I'd be happy to see a more kind of formal expression of the parallel. So I'll just throw that out there. If you're interested, send me an email and we can talk about it. So today we're going to look at practical postulates. So here the idea is we've gone through the ideal formulation of quantum theory, but now let's talk about a formulation which can accommodate experimental reality. Okay, so the first thing we're going to do is we're going to go from ideal, what are called pure states, to mixed states. So there are a couple of ways that you can have a description of your system that's not a pure state. So let's look at some. We'll look at two ways in which we need something more general than a vector or a projector and here I mean or the rank or the associated rank one projector. To describe a system or a preparation procedure. For that system. Okay, so the first case is pretty straightforward. We're going to imagine a following situation. Suppose our device or preparation procedure does the following. It prepares some vector psi 1 in a Hilbert space with probability p1. And it prepares a different vector psi 2 with probability p2. Well, p2 is just going to be 1 minus p1. So how can we account for that in a unified way? Okay, well, suppose we're measuring some observable A, which we can write in terms of its spectral decomposition. Then we have the probability of outcome A is equal to the trace of probability of outcome A conditioned on preparation psi 1 is equal to the trace of psi 1 by A. And the probability of outcome A conditioned on preparation psi 2 is equal to the same expression, but with psi 2 substituted. So we don't know which preparation took place on any given run. So given that we don't know if psi 1 or psi 2 was prepared, the overall probability is probability of A equal to P1 times the probability of A given psi 1 plus P2 times the probability of A given psi 2. But now the trace is a linear operation, right? So the trace is a linear map. Trace is a linear function. Well, what I guess I should call it a functional. So it takes as input for a given pi A, it takes as input some element of the complex projective space, and it gives as output a scalar. And in this case, it's actually a real number. So we can just express this as the probability of A is equal to the trace of pi A times P1 psi 1 plus 1 minus P1 psi 2. I'm sorry, I guess you guys can't see this very well. But then let's define an operator rho to be exactly this expression, p1 psi1 psi1 plus p2 psi2 psi2. And then we have just the probability of outcome A is equal to the trace of pi A rho. Now, I've used the cyclic property of the trace, which I assume you're all familiar with.
all P1 and P2, they're like the probabilities of finding the state A condition psi 1.
I'm sorry?
You are defining small P1 and P2 as these probabilities.
I define small 1, P1, and P2 over here. It's the probability of preparing state psi 1, and you prepare state psi 2 with probability P2.
Is that the same thing as the P2?
No. So this is, suppose your system always prepared psi 1. Then the probability of A given preparation psi 1 is this expression.
Okay.
So it has nothing to do with P1.
Okay.
But now I say, suppose that you prepare psi 1 probability P1. Then we need to put a weight on this expression and a different weight on this expression and combine them like this. So this is P1 times the probability of A. So more generally, we can construct we call rho a density operator. Which satisfies the following properties. One, notice that the trace of rho is equal to 1. This is actually the normalization for and also note that rho is a non-negative operator. I.e. rho is a non-negative operator. Sometimes people just say a positive operator, but that's a bit of an abusive terminology, but it's very common. Okay, so how many of you remember the definition of a positive operator, or non-negative operator? Not even you?
It's A dagger A for some A. Which is closer to saying all its eigenvalues are positive.
I think that's a special case.
No, it's just, I don't know for at least bounded operators it's equivalent.
Yeah, so here's my definition, and I don't know which is more general or if they're equivalent. But a non-negative operator, also called a positive semi-definite operator. So it's just going to say or. Is self-adjoint and satisfies U rho U is greater than or equal to 0 for every U in the Hilbert space. Okay, in finite dimensions, if the dimension of the Hilbert space is finite, then rho can be expressed as S dagger S in terms of some linear operator S. I don't know any of the properties of S for some S. This is called the Cholesky decomposition. How does that?
If Rose trace one is bounded by this.
Yes.
That means I'm pretty sure I can get notes. I'll check my notes and get back to you. I'm pretty sure you don't have to.
Well, okay, but notice that here I'm just giving the general definition of non-negative operator.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure you don't.
Yeah, I think for density operators, which are bounded, this probably holds, but I'd have to check that.
Yeah, I'll get back.
Okay, any questions about this? Let me give you the most general mixture. So here we just had an example where we had two different states, but don't start on the back one is the lesson from this. All right, sorry about that. More generally, in general, we can have rho equal to some convex combination of arbitrary pure states where the PIs go between 0 and 1. And sum to 1. So just a note on terminology, I called this a convex decomposition. What do I call it? Yeah, convex decomposition. It'd be a probabilistic decomposition. This is why we call it a mixed state, because it's a probabilistic mixture of pure states. You can even have a continuous decomposition with some probability weight, some probability density, I shouldn't call it rho, I guess. Just call it mu of lambda. Psi lambda. And as long as this measure, as long as mu is a probability measure, then automatically, we're going to satisfy these two properties. It's pretty straightforward to see. Maybe that could be an exercise or something. Did you already cover this in your tutorial? Okay. Okay, so that's kind of the trivial way in which you'd want to describe a system with a density operator instead of a pure state. But there's a much more interesting scenario to do with entanglement where you need a density operator to describe your system. And this is, in a sense, more fundamental because this is really this case where you're dealing with a probabilistic preparation procedure. It's just a convenience to use the density operator. But now we're going to see, in the second case, we're going to see a scenario where it's not a convenience but a necessity to describe certain scenarios. So, okay, so sorry, my ones and twos are mixed up. I guess this should be A and B, just to keep things clean. So here's my first method, and now my second method. Yeah.
But how would
you? Well, I could just go back to. What I wrote on the board behind this, I could just calculate the probability given psi 1 and then calculate the probability of outcome given psi 2 and then, you know, in post-processing just kind of combine them the right way. I don't need a unified notation to describe the quantum system. Oh, there it is. All right. Oh, well, I want... Yeah, you know, I've been lecturing at this board for I don't know how many years, and I still don't understand exactly how to do this. Okay, so okay, here's the more interesting scenario. We need. How did I title this one? I just suppose. Okay, so let me just call it density operators from entanglement. Okay, so suppose we have a Hilbert space HAB comprised of HA and HB. And here I mean the full generality here. We could have two particles. We could have the spatial degree of freedom of a particle and its spin degree of freedom. You know, all these different scenarios in which you have a composite Hilbert space. And this applies to any of those. Oh, I'm carrying this pen. And then let's assume we have some preparation of the joint system, which is some state psi, which is an element of HAB, which we're going to express as a projector, which is, of course, a linear operator on HAB. Okay, so that's our preparation. Now, in general, psi is going to be some complicated entangled state, okay? And now the problem is, now suppose we're only measuring one part of the system. And what I mean by that is our observable on AB has the form, say, A tensor identity on B, where A is a linear operator on just the Hilbert space associated with the degree of freedom A. Okay, so then our properties, so now O is going to have a spectral decomposition. Okay, here I'm just not following my notes, which I probably should, so I don't make typos. Okay, let's forget about the spectral decomposition. That's one way to do it. Let's just talk about the expectation value of O, which is going to be psi O psi, which is more explicitly psi A tensor identity. I'm just going to drop the B subscript and assume it's implicit via the fact that it's on the right-hand side of the tensor product symbol. Okay, so how many of you have seen this before and know where I'm going? What a surprising fraction. Good. Okay, so you'll just have to bear with us then. But now the question is, here we're carrying this extra Hilbert space around and it's kind of baggage, right? So what we want some description of the state pertaining to system A alone. Well, that's not a question. It's a statement. It's a demand, I guess, there. Okay, so the best way to see this is just to write everything out explicitly. Okay, so this is a bit tedious, but we'll do it. Oh, you did this in the tutorial. Oh, it is. Oh, so well, good. Then I can skip the tedious calculation. Great. All right. So, so essentially, the upshot of this is that what you get is, well, you choose a basis. For the Hilbert space, which I do this way.
Oh, and sorry, I take it back, I'm sorry. It's on the homework.
It's on the homework?
Does anyone have a copy of the homework? Yeah. Is that the last question on the homework? Sorry. Yeah, it's the third question on the homework. Sorry, it's up to you.
Well, let me see how you ask it and if there's anything I can add. Thanks. It's not really on the homework, is it?
I mean, it's you're deriving the trans operator, right?
No, I'm just giving a reduced density operator. Where I'm going here is the partial. Okay, so, okay, let me do it. This is yours, right? How many of you know? Well, where I'm going, okay, I'll tell you where I'm going, so it's not a surprise. I'm going to derive the partial trace. That's where I'm going. So, how many of you know about the partial trace?
There was on
the
tutorial.
Okay. So that was in the tutorial. All right. So, okay. Okay, well, I'm deriving it here then. Perfect. Okay, good. So you choose an orthonormal basis, and then you can evaluate. We can obviously evaluate this. We can evaluate this expression in terms of the original state psi, and I'll skip the steps here. And what you get is a sum over L, L prime, A, L prime, L. This is just the matrix representation of A in the Hilbert space it's acting on. And then we get this other expression that shows up in terms of okay, this is a bit clumsy, but let me just define rho as this projector. We get this other expression of the form rho LK L prime K prime, where here the point is that rho LK L prime K prime is equal to AL. Here, let me drop the tensor product notation, BK rho AL prime BK prime. Okay, so now I'm gonna be careful with the hats, because here this is a linear operator. This is a linear operator. I'm taking a transition matrix element between these two basis elements. So this object here is a scalar. And in general, it can be complex if L is not equal to K. Okay, so now this is a sum over scalars, and this should also include, first let me fix a typo. So this prime disappears, and it's just a sum over a single k. That's the key point. OK, so I'd encourage you to work this through. This is just a bunch of index gymnastics, basically. And you get this expression. And here's the general expression for the matrix elements. And now we're only interested in the case where k equals k prime. OK, so that's what we get for the expectation. And where I'm going with this now is I'm going to say, now suppose we had some linear operator. Okay, so let me just put this in a box. Okay, now suppose we have some linear operator which I'll call rho sub A. Which describes our system on this factor space A alone. Okay, what would be the properties of that? Well, we would have the probability, not the probability, but the expectation of A would be equal to the trace of row A against A. And we can evaluate what that would look like with respect to our basis AL for the A space. And what we would get is a sum over L prime L, AL L prime. And I think this should actually be, okay, it's L prime L, sorry, times row A L L prime. Where now row A L L prime is defined as A L row A A L prime. And then for consistency, okay, so now that's our second result. And then for consistency, this prediction should agree with this prediction. So we want A tensor identity B to be equal to the expectation of A. And this tells us then that we must have that this object row A, which we've hypothesized exists, should be equal to the sum over K of row LK L prime K. And now this is, of course, in a representation, a matrix representation, and we can abstract this out to just something that's not basis dependent, and we can write row A is equal to what's called the partial trace of row. Okay, so the meaning of this expression is that the partial trace is, I'll define mathematically what's going on here in a moment, but let me just say physically what's happening. I have some, say, rank one projector describing my state in the AB space, and now I can describe my system on A alone. With respect to that global information, I can have a local description of rho on the Hilbert space A via this operation. Okay, so what is this operation? It's exactly this. Let me just discuss it formally. In general, the partial trace with respect to the Hilbert space B is equal to a sum over K BK BK for any orthonormal basis. For the second Hilbert space. More generally, let me just remark that the partial trace with respect to B is a map from linear operators on H A tensor H B to linear operators on H A. Okay, so that's important to remember because the regular trace. So contrast this in contrast. The regular trace is a map from linear operators on some Hilbert space to the scalars. But here, the partial trace, this is called the partial trace. The partial trace is a linear map from linear operators to linear operators on a larger Hilbert space to linear operators on a factor space of that Hilbert space. Yes?
C is just the linear operators on C, though, so it's exactly the same.
I'm sorry?
C C, isn't C the linear operators on C though?
C, what do you mean C?
Like I said, the complex numbers are the, they also the set of linear operators on themselves.
So in some, it's a one dimensional Hilbert space, right? Okay, man, all right. Yes, that's correct. but I don't think that's a good way to think about it. Okay, so are there any questions about this? It's going to come up a lot. Yeah?
So what does it mean when you write BK? Rho is a, you know, the double system, right?
Yeah, so here rho is the same rho I've been using throughout, which is a linear operator on HA tensor HB.
Yeah, and BK is just an HB, right?
So BK is just a basis in HB.
So what does it mean when you write
this?
No.
Over here?
No. Trace B.
Oh, this?
No.
Oh, this means this.
So that's how you define this.
Yeah, so yeah, it's awkward because you refer to a basis to define it, but it's a basis independent operation. It's very strange. No, I can't. I don't think I can. I mean, the point is that this object, this is an operator-valued object. See, here's the thing that's confusing. This is why I'm emphasizing this distinction. You see something like this, and you're used to that being a scalar, right? But that's not what's happening here, because rho is a linear operator on a Hilbert space, and here we're just kind of contracting out one of the Hilbert spaces. So I can... Okay, so here's one way. Here, let me give you a kind of an explicit example so it's a bit clear how it works. So suppose that rho is equal to a pure state, and let's make it equal to AK AL, let me use a different index than K, BM AL. BM. All right, so now there should be little tensor product symbols in here, which I'm suppressing, okay? So this is my state. This is a linear operator on HA across HB. And now I'm going to take the partial trace with respect to B of rho. I can also do it with respect to A. It works both ways. I've just defined it with respect to one space. It doesn't matter if it's the left or the right factor space. And now I've told you the way to do this is you choose some basis. So here let's choose a basis which includes BM as an element. So we choose some basis, sub K, BK, and then we insert, now let's insert this expression, which is going to be AL tensor BM, AL tensor BM. And now this could be, we could have a linear, a convex combination of such states, and that would just, everything would be still linear. And then we have BK here. Okay, now here's where we look at the action of the dual vector on this space. And we discussed this a class or two ago. BK is a bra, which is a linear functional on the vectors in HB, right? So BK takes vectors in HB and spits out a scalar. So it's a linear functional. So what it's going to do is it's going to act on this. It's going to completely ignore this because it's not in the right space. It's going to run right past through it, and it's going to act on BM. But now I'm assuming that this is an orthonormal basis. So we're going to have BK BM is equal to delta KM. And similarly on the right-hand side here, now this is a linear functional that's going to act on this vector, and we're going to get the same delta function constraint. BM BK is equal to delta MK. Okay, so then what we're going to have is our sum over k is going to go away. Just one term is going to survive. and we're going to get AL, AL out. Now, this is a slightly trivial example because we just had one term in the sum. It's more interesting when I generalize this, and let's just put a little probability distribution over the m values. Okay? So this is p is a probability now. And then we're going to have more than one term is going to survive. So, well, I guess maybe this isn't rich enough of an example because I want to correlate the L's with the M's somehow. I have to think about the right way to do that. But, well, hopefully this will suffice for now. Maybe we'll see a better example. Maybe this would be another good example for a tutorial. I could help you kind of think of a good state that we could practice with. But the point is we applied the partial trace and we were left with a linear operator on HA. Does that help a bit?
Yeah.
Good. All right, so now let me just discuss some formal properties here. So here's what I'm going to claim. If rho is an arbitrary density operator, okay, so I define density operator over there. This includes mixtures of pure states. If on your larger Hilbert space you have some density operator, then rho A, defined as the trace over B of rho, is a density operator on HA. So if you start with the density operator and you do a partial trace, you're left with another density operator on the smaller space. And so I don't know if my definition over here was explicit, but a density operator is it satisfies conditions A and B. That's what I mean by density operator. So in this way, we have a self-consistent way of talking about systems. Even when we only know their global description, we can still find an effective description on the factor space, which is a valid state operator. Okay, so now let's discuss some properties. So pure versus mixed states. Oh, so first, actually, I can give you an axiom now. Now we finally are in a position to state our postulate. An arbitrary preparation of a system may be described by a density operator. Just repeat the conditions defining density operator. So this is the definition of density operator, is that we have rho is a non-negative operator, And by normalization, we want our probabilities to add to 1. We make sure that the trace, not the partial trace, the regular trace here is 1. Okay, so now you can go to the lab and describe anyone's experiment with one of these objects. And this is obviously a matrix in terms of the matrix representation. And so I'd like to say a few words about the difference between pure states and mixed states. Are there any other questions about this? Yeah.
So it seems like there's like one-to-one correspondence with density operators and state vectors, right?
No.
They're not?
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, and no. Yeah, you mean in terms of, okay, we're gonna discuss that. It's called purification. So in other words, I give you some density operator, and you say, I want to think about this as a pure state on a bigger Hilbert space. That's called a purification of the density operator. And you can always do that, but it's non-unique.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And we actually will get to that. So remember that I've been encouraging you, even when we were talking about ideal quantum mechanics, I wanted you to start thinking about your pure states as projectors rather than vectors. And that way we can have a unified notation that works whether the system is ideal or not ideal. I have the same mathematical framework. And now let's look at what the how the properties are different in that framework when I have the ideal situation. Yeah?
Is the type of mixed state that you introduced first, is it proper to think of that as actually always a form of purification?
It's funny you use the word proper. So in the philosophical literature, there's a distinction which is empirically irrelevant but philosophically interesting between, you say, okay, I have some mixed state, which I haven't defined for you yet, but it's a density operator that's not pure. If it arose because of just classical mixing of pure states on that space, they call that a proper mixture. So there it's proper because it's just like classically, if I have a collection of phase space points and I don't know where my system is, I just describe it as a probabilistic mixture of those. And then when you get a mixed state because you have a pure entangled state of a composite system, and then you're just describing one of the two systems and you do the partial trace and you get a mixed state on your system of interest, that's called an improper mixture. And this comes up when people debate whether the state is physical or not, because then it's a funny thing. Because if you think the state is physical, then if you get your state from an improper mixture, then people think, well, maybe that mixture is physical as well, and it's this whole mess. But
if you gave me a qubit but didn't tell me whether it was spin up or spin down, then that would be what you're calling in a proper mixture.
Mm-hmm.
But would it also be, you could also think of it as an improper mixture if I modeled the whole system but traced you out. Mm-hmm.
So yes, any density operator, any mixed state, admits a mathematical decomposition in terms of a probabilistic mixture of pure states. And it also admits a mathematical purification as a pure state in a larger Hilbert space. And experimentally, we can't tell the difference. There's no way to tell. I don't know if I'm addressing your question bang on here, but I mean, these are important points anyways, but did I
sort of meant, is there always a physical instantiation, like the mathematical purification? I'll ask you about it.
Sure, okay. I have some notes here that touch on these issues, so maybe that'll help. Okay, pure states versus mixed states. So given a density operator, this blackboard's nicer. These kind of wobble when you. So given some density operator rho, and I've defined it by these two conditions, including I'm assuming it's normalized, then there are 3 equivalent ways to characterize its purity. I think this was in your, was this in your tutorial? There are 3 equivalent conditions for purity. I guess I haven't really defined what I mean by purity for you yet. let me finish this thought and then I'll tell you what I mean. Well, it's obvious from this. So the first condition is that rho squared is equal to rho. The second condition is that rho admits, can be expressed in this way for some psi in the Hilbert space. Condition two here is the definition of a pure state. So if you have a density operator and it admits, it can be expressed as a rank one projector, then it's a pure state. It turns out that there are two other equivalent ways to characterize the set of pure states from the set of all density operators. There's condition one, which is you check that it squares to itself, which is a property of a rank one, well, it's a property of a projector. And the normalization means it's sufficient to identify it as a rank one projector. And then the final condition is actually the one you would use to calculate. So sorry, my handwriting is getting a little bit sloppy here. So this is rho squared. Let me write it more carefully. The point is, you would take your density operator, you would square it, you would take the trace of the resulting of rho squared, and you check if it's one. And if it's one, that means the state is pure. So this is the easiest one, because obviously searching over the continuous set of all vectors to find the right projector is not very practical. But you know, squaring the matrix and checking it's equal to itself, or even better yet, square the matrix, sum the diagonal elements, check if they add to one. That's the easiest thing if you're going to do this on MATLAB or something. That's the easiest way to check, or by hand, to check that it's pure. Okay, so if your density operator satisfies any one of these three conditions, it's a pure state. It looks like this is a weaker condition than this, but in fact, because we have non-negativity and normalization, they are equivalent. So for purity, I mean, these conditions, let me just be clear here. These conditions define pure states. Okay, in general, that didn't work. How do I get to the backboard? Top buttons. Any of them? Oh, thank you. Okay, so for any density operator rho, we have the following condition: trace rho squared is less than or equal to 1 and greater than or equal to 1 over d. Well, here I'm assuming that and so let me just give you a lemma. Any density operator can be expressed as a convex combination of pure states. And another lemma is that, in fact, the number of such, there's an infinite number of such decompositions. Let me not call it a lemma. Let me just call it a remark. There are, in fact, an infinite number of such decompositions. Of distinct decompositions. What this means is, if I prepare a mixed state, say the identity operator, by having 50% probability of spin up and 50% probability of spin down, that's actually the same state as if I prepared 50% probability of spin to the left and 50% probability of spin to the right. So either way, it gives you the identity operator. And if I give you that state, you can't tell how I created it. You don't know if I created it from mixtures of up and down versus left and right, or you don't know if I created an entangled state of two spin f particles, and I'm just giving you one of them. Yeah? A convex combination is a probabilistic mixture. So for example, let rho equal identity over 2, which is a mixed state. I can think of this as a probabilistic mixture of 1/2 probability of 0 plus 1/2 probability of 1. So this is identity on 2. Okay.
Is that remark true for pure states?
Thank you. Okay. Well, if you're going to allow me to throw in, I guess C1 factors won't help here. Okay, so. This is because I diverged from my notes. My notes, this is actually a lemma, and I said mixed states, and so I should follow the script. Okay, good. This is actually probably a good place to stop. And then next class, we'll start looking at some really interesting stuff. We'll look at entanglement theory, how to characterize entanglement, and so on, which is pretty interesting stuff. So we'll end a bit early today. Okay, thanks for your attention.